I was Jennifer Smith until I married in 66. I'm now known in hockey as Jenny Cardwell. I've been a player, an international player, an international coach, an international manager, and manager for Great Britain at the 96 Olympics. So it's been a long career, but it's been a hard-fought battle to get to where I am, jumping through all of hockey's hoops.
Can you tell me where you started?
Yeah, I'm a Tottenham girl, and I went to a school called Tottenham County, which was a mixed grammar school, and our playing fields were a good half an hour away. And so once a week, if we were lucky and the weather was all right, we'd get on a bus, go down to White Hart Lane and walk to the playing fields. Started my hockey there. I can't say we had the most brilliant hockey coach, because we didn't, but we were a group of really aggressive, wanting to win players. So we weren't the most skilled, but we were pretty successful. And because of that, my PE teacher said she thought we ought to go to Middlesex Trials, which I have an identical twin sister called Ros Marsh, and she and I went to Middlesex Trials, over the posh side of Middlesex, I might add, sort of like the Pinner end. Well, when we got there, it was quite obvious that most of the girls were from the posher schools in Middlesex, and we had our trials, and which didn't last very long, because to be fair to the selectors, there were lots of people there. Anyway, needless to say, we didn't get in, and when we went home and told our mum, we only had 10 minutes in the position we wanted to play and 10 minutes in another position we didn't want to play particularly. She was livid. So she wrote to the Evening Standard and complained that her girls, who she thought were brilliant, didn't get into a Middlesex team, and all these girls from the posh schools did. And there was a letter back from one of the selectors saying, you know, the hundreds of girls, it's very difficult, etc., etc. But anyway, so I never made a Middlesex at all, neither did my sister. And then I went to college, PE Wing College in Durham, and Frieda Walker was my tutor there, who just finished playing for England B and was a very good coach, and she got me to go to Durham Trials. And so for 3 years I played in the Durham second 11, and when I left college in 64 I went to live in Essex and got in touch with Peggy Nisbet, who was the most brilliant hockey person I think I've ever met. She was the Essex secretary, and Peggy sent me a list of the clubs where I was going to live in the Rayleigh, Southend, Westcliff area. And I joined Westcliff Ladies, and Julie went on to Essex Trials. Now they had I was playing a fullback at the time, two really experienced fullbacks, and needless to say I got into Essex Seconds. And I was in Essex 2 years, and then we moved down to Sussex. By that time I'd married, and we went down to Sussex, to Worthing. And again, I played for Sussex Seconds for 2 years because Bar West was chairman of selectors and head of hockey at Chelsea CPE. And of course, all our girls were far more brilliant than anyone local. So I didn't get in there either. And then eventually, my husband and I moved to Ipswich in Suffolk. And in 1968, I at last made it into the Suffolk first team, simply because three girls who all played halfbacks were pregnant. So what a fortuitous moment for me. So I got into the Suffolk first team, and I made East B that year. By this time I'm playing a halfback, which was a position I really loved. So I've played everything. At school I was a forward, went to college, became a back, and now I'm playing a halfback. So I've had a pretty good grounding. And anyway, got into the East B. So the next year, all the ones who were pregnant and very good, they were England players, came back. We had a really good season, and I made it to the East A team. And that year, I went on to play for England. Again, stroke of luck. I was a reserve, because we didn't have substitutes in those days. I was one of the reserves that went with the England team. We were going to play at Wembley, and a girl called Barbara Harvey, who's a great friend of mine, played in the East. She fell up a step on our way out of our training pitch on the Friday afternoon. We spent the evening in hospital. Her ankle swelled terribly. We waited till the morning, but it was no better. So suddenly, I'm playing at Wembley. So after all this time and waiting, I played, and then I played for England for a few years. But I think, again, maybe all the waiting, all the learning, playing with people who are better than me, I picked up a lot. And I was also a fitness fanatic, which I think helped. I used to train with my husband's rugby team pre-season, and then I'd be out running, and I took training when I was in Suffolk. I took all the training and so on. So, you know, I might not have been the most skilled, but I was certainly going to be the fittest in the last 15 minutes, which stood me in good stead.
You said you started off as being a fairly aggressive player at school. How much was that due to being at a mixed school? Because they weren't too common mixed schools.
No, I mean, we didn't play with the boys. The PE was completely separate. The boys played rugby. They didn't play hockey. So it wasn't like... If you're competitive, you can't give people that. You're either competitive or you're not. And I'm still competitive now. It doesn't matter what I'm doing. You know, I want to be good at it. And I want to win. And I don't... It's... As a PE teacher, it was so frustrating when you got a really talented player at any sport, but if they didn't have that will to win, sorry, they're not going to make it. You know, you can't give somebody that. It's something you're born with. I think I became probably less aggressive after I'd had the children. Maybe the hormones changed or something, I don't know. But, I just want to win. And I don't see any point in playing anything if you don't want to win it.
How did it feel going out on that Wembley pitch?
Fabulous. I mean, because it was so sudden, I didn't have long to have nerves about it. You know, it was a few hours before we were on the pitch virtually. And it was at that game that I've been wearing contact lenses since 1962 and still do. And at the end of the match, I had something in my eye, so I had to take one of my contact lenses out at the end of the match. And I was about to put it back in my eye when it blew off my finger. So instead of running around the pitch waving at everybody, I was grovelling on my hands and knees looking for my contact lens. And a policeman came out and he said, "What's the matter, love?" I said, "I've lost my contact lens." And he had looked at me. He said, "Look, go on, get after the players," he said, "and I'll search for you." Well, we went back in, round the pitch, down the tunnel, and I'd given up on this contact lens. And a few minutes later, a knock at the door, and it was the policeman, and he found my contact lens. So it's quite remarkable. So,
absolutely.
I mean, obviously since then I've taken a spare pair of contact lenses with me wherever I've gone. But I mean, it was, you can't explain that noise when you came out through that tunnel with all those schoolgirls. It was just wonderful. And I also,
who were you playing against?
Oh, I think it was Scotland, but I can't honestly remember now. And a few years later, when I'd stopped playing for England, I went to the dinner with the Queen, and which was a lovely occasion, apart from the fact I had to wear a hat from BHS, which cost me a fiver, which I never wore again. But anyway, we went in for the meal, and I sat next to one of her security people, an absolutely charming man, really liked him, chatted to him, and a few months later he got the push because he turned out to be a homosexual, and they were scared that he might be bribed, whatever, to do something inappropriate that would lead to danger for the Queen and so on. But a more charming man, he loved his job. I just felt so sorry for him. So thank God attitudes have changed.
Did you meet the Queen?
Yes. And I met her when I got my OBE, which was lovely. And we were both in royal blue. How about that?
Oh! And did she remark on the fact?
No, she didn't. But I did remind her when we were talking, I did remind her about her coming to Wembley and what a very noisy occasion was. And she said she remembered. Whether she did amongst all the millions of things she must have done, I don't know. But it was a special occasion. And it's such a pity in some ways that it's gone, but, you know, everything moves on.
Talking of moving on, you said you took the training at Suffolk. Was that the start of your coaching?
I suppose it was. And then you get roped in to do coach the Suffolk juniors and... Then I got asked to coach the East Juniors, which I really loved. And it wasn't long after that. It must have been, was it 1980? I was coached from 1983, so it must have been 1982 when I get a phone call from Mary Russell Vick, who was president of the association. We had just come fifth, I think it was, in Kuala Lumpur in the World Cup. And Wyn Heath had either resigned or retired, I can't remember which. And this phone call came from Mary Russell-Vick to say that she'd like to ask me to be England coach. So I said, "Oh yeah, of the under 18s." She said, because that's why I was coaching the East under 18. She said, "No, the seniors." I said, no, Mary, I don't know enough. I've been out of international hockey for a few years. I don't think I've got enough knowledge." She said, Well, we think you have. And it's something you can gain as you go along. So I said, well, let me think about it. So she said, okay. So I spoke to my husband, Ben. I mean, I really was. I'm not very often gobsmacked, as you can tell from all this verbal diarrhea. But, you know, I just thought, can I do this? I don't know that I'm good enough anymore to do this. Because skills were changing. It was AstroTurf. Of course, I played a bit on AstroTurf, but mainly, obviously, grass. Anyway, I rang a Suffolk friend of mine called Eileen Wills, who played for England, whose opinion I appreciated. And I told her what had happened, and she said, you've got to do it, Jen. Yeah, you will be able to do it. I know you can do it. I said, do you really think so? She said, yes, I do. So I rang Mary back and said, okay, you know, I'll give it a go. She said, well, it's for 3 years from 83, and they brought the next World Cup to 86. It's only a three-year gap. I forget why now, probably to do with the Olympics or the Europeans or something. They changed the gap. And I said, no, I don't, you know, I'm not going to do this on my own. I need an assistant coach. They agreed I could have assistant coach because Wyn Heath didn't have an assistant coach. It's too big a job to do on your own. So she said, well, go ahead, get yourself an assistant coach. So I rang, my first choice was Anita White, but Anita was too busy, didn't want to do it. I then rang Verona Nolan, who was coaching England 18s, and she said, no, I really like doing the under 18s, Jen. I said, fine. And I spoke to Frieda Walker, my ex-PE lecturer, and I said to Frieda, got any suggestions? She said, well, I've just come back from testing Sue Slocum for her Advanced Coaches Award. She said, and she's a really first-rate coach. I really recommend her. Well, I knew Sue because I played against her. So I rang Sue and I told her exactly the situation, you know, that I'd rung Anita, I'd rung Verona. Frieda had recommended her. Sue was still playing England B at that stage. Would she be interested? And she said, let me think about it, Jen. I'll talk to Martin, that was her husband, and I'll ring you back. Anyway, she rang me back and said, yeah, she'd do it. And it was the best, not about fortuitous, it was the best thing that ever happened. She was fantastic. And we did it together for 3 years, and I knew at the end of 3 years that she was a better coach than I was, that she could take the players further than I could. At that stage, I felt I'd done everything I could. For me, that was as far as I was going to go. And she wanted to go into things in so much more depth. She was way ahead of her time. And so I gave up in 86, and Sue became England coach. And she had a year, and then we got chatting. And I said, you know, I really wouldn't mind being your manager. I felt I could support her like that. I knew the players well anyway. And I knew they wanted me back involved again. And she said, great. So I applied for the England manager's job, but didn't get it. I was gutted. There's a lady from the north called Betty who got the job. Very nice lady. But just didn't have the background that I had to give Sue that sort of support. I've never cried much in hockey, but I certainly cried over that because I felt I knew I could do that job so well and give Sue the sort of support that she needed to fulfil all her coaching ambitions that were there and I believed in. Anyway, so we waited another year and I applied again, and this time I got it. So in 89, I became Sue's manager. And we went on then, and in 91, of course, we won the Europeans in Brussels, which was absolutely fantastic. You know, it was always a difficult time with England because money was so tight. After 91, the next year, of course, 92, was Olympic year. We just won the Europeans. There was no money for the England senior squad. I mean, no money. Because the under-21s had a world championship in Tarassa, where the... Oh, that must have been 93. Anyway, one of the years we certainly didn't have any money, and all the good players had gone to GB. So it was a building year for England, very important. So I put a letter in the hockey field and said, we desperately need donations. I want to keep this squad together. We want to go on developing them. And we got some money, and we went to Oakham School, which let us have their facilities for virtually nothing, and a lovely pitch, pavilion, and I used to put them in, it's a travel lodge nearby, and we had three in a room for £29.99 a night. I think they were allowed £3 for their breakfast. The selectors did all the lunches in the pavilion, and they had a very limited amount of money for a meal in the evening. And we kept going. So my mum, who had a business, funded us to go to, I got them into a tournament in Holland, and we took them over there as a touring side, although it was the England team, so we could keep on going. We borrowed some buses from Julie Cook's school at Harwich, went across Harwich Hook. I mean, you know, you talk about that these days even, it is totally, they cannot understand what it was like. We got all the professional help we needed for nothing, because we were, Sue and I were always on courses that were being run either by European Hockey or the International Olympic Committee. We got video people on board very early on in the game, and they did it through their university to help us. We went on nutritional courses, then got the nutritional people to help us for nothing. We did all the psychology, the relaxation, some people who helped us for nothing. We kept up with all the really professional sides, like the Australians, the Dutch, the Germans, who had all their centres of excellence and all their experts. And it was really hard to keep England in touch with everything in the world. And, you know, I just feel really proud of what we achieved in the time we were gathered with England till 94. And that was probably the biggest disappointment of our life, was the World Cup in Dublin in 94, where we just scrambled ninth place to get an Olympic qualifying position. And then Sue and I went on to be coach and manager of Great Britain for Atlanta. And, you know, we spent 2 years building the side up. And it is a very difficult job to do, because suddenly you've got the Scots, the Irish by that stage weren't with Great Britain. It was just the Scots and the Welsh. And these have always been, you know, our big, big rivals. I wouldn't say we hated each other, but there was no love lost, let's put it like that. I mean, I've been to tournaments where the Scots have been cheering for the Germans when we've been playing the Germans, which I found hard to stomach. As long as Scotland's not playing England, I'd always cheer for Scotland as I would for Wales. I just can't, you know, we can't be responsible for what happened 300 or 400 years ago. We just can't. So it's a difficult transition to suddenly get people in a very short space of time to make selections and then to integrate people as a team. And we went off to Cape Town in December 95, to try and qualify. Well, no one gave us a cat in hell's chance of even qualifying. And I think there were 8 teams there, and in the end we came second. And I think the top either 3 or 4 teams qualified. So we qualified with ease, actually, which was absolutely fantastic. And I must admit, at the end of that, I felt absolutely drained, because it had been such a lot of pressure, with no one thinking we could do anything or get anywhere, but we did. And then we went to the Olympics, and again, no one thought we'd come anywhere there. We had 8 teams at the Olympics, and you had to play everybody. And it was every other day, and on one occasion you had to play consecutive days in 30 plus degrees of heat and 95% humidity. It was ridiculous. Anyway, we started off badly, but we finished really well, and we finished third in the table. And that wasn't good enough, though. Australia were top, Korea were second, we were third, and the Dutch were fourth. And the Dutch had the same number of points as us, but we had a better goal difference. So you had to play off for the bronze match. And it was nil all, and it went to penalty strokes. And we lost it on a penalty stroke. And, it was another occasion when I actually cried. Because to have got so close, and then, you know, when people again had written us off, we were never going to do anything at the Olympics. And it was a terrible Olympics for Great Britain. They were desperate to win something, and we were so close to winning that bronze medal. So anyway, so that was our final time for Sue and I. Again, we were sort of too early for the professional By professional, I mean, we were very professional, in my opinion. The professional, by meaning paying.
Yes.
When we left England in 94, Maggie Suyav came in as coach, and she was paid. When we left Great Britain in 96, the next group came in, and they were paid. We had to do all of this, keeping up our jobs. Now, in the final year in our preparation for Great Britain, I had the first term off school. Sue had the whole year off her university lecturing role, and Great Britain paid for that. They paid for my first term off. I went back for the Easter term, and then they paid for the summer term off. And that gave Sue a lot more time to consider what she was doing. She went and visited the players all over the country and so on, so that she could stay in touch with them before we brought them back together again. And it's just, if we'd have been paid to do our jobs, we'd have had the energy and the knowledge to have gone on to Sydney. Did we want to do Sydney? Of course we. Who wouldn't want to do Sydney? Atlanta was probably the worst Olympic Games that's ever been run. It was chaos there. But we just did not have that energy to do it. So we finished in 96. Would have been a real high if we'd have got the bronze. It was almost a high coming fourth. But no one remembers who came fourth. They just remember who won the medals and so on. So, yeah, it's been a... Like all sport, it's a roller coaster. You know, you feel proud of what you've achieved, considering how little we had to achieve it with in terms of facilities, finance, expertise. But because of our determination that we were going to do and find all the things that would make it that extra bit, you know, that we needed to do. And we were going on coaching courses with people from professional football clubs, managers in the first division, as it was in those days. They hadn't got a clue. They were way behind the times. And here we were, not paid, and we were way, you know, we were way ahead of rugby. I mean, it's come on enormously since then, but we were way ahead of all those sorts of sports because we were determined to find out what was out there in sports science and use it to the best of our advantage.
What do you look back on with most affection and pride?
My relationships with the people I work with, the players. Oh.
There's no shame in getting emotional about that. I think 90% of the feedback I'm getting from people I'm interviewing is the thing they get most out of hockey is relationships, friendships.
Absolutely.
And the lasting friendships.
Yes, and it's still here at this tournament.
Yeah.
You know, yesterday in the international hockey players' place next door, you know, you see people you haven't seen for ages, but it doesn't matter. You know, I saw Mandy Davis yesterday, who was with us when we won the European in 91. She hasn't changed. I was just telling her kids what a fantastic singer she was. I can see her in Brussels on a table, dancing on this table and singing. And the kids were going, oh, you know, like, did my mum do that? How embarrassing, you know. But, you know, it was just lovely. So what do I look on most affection? Yeah, the people I work with, Sue in particular, who has my total admiration because she was going through very difficult times at times when she was coach. And she... The strength I saw in that woman was second to none, and I just believed in her totally. That's why I wanted to go back as manager to support her and make certain that she had every chance to take those players as far as they could. So, yeah.
What about your own children? Are they involved in hockey?
No, my daughter played for the East under 18s, and then when she went down to Plymouth, she played for Plymouth University. And she became captain, and I remember coming down from, I lived in Maidstone at the time, all the way from Maidstone to Plymouth to coach her team for her. But then she got into left-wing politics and hockey just took a back seat. So no, she, and my son was, he was a good little hockey player, but then he went into football, then he got injured with his bad knees and that was it. So, but they've always been keen on sport. But
and you've maintained your connections with hockey?
Yes, I have, yeah, because, you know, we've been to lots of different tournaments all over the place, the Europeans, there's a group of us with Katie Dodd, Pete Damone, Netta, and they make arrangements, and Ros and I, that's my sister, tag on, and, you know, last time we went over to Belgium with them and we got on the Eurostar, it was lovely, they all went by car and then we got ferried everywhere, so it was just beautiful. Yeah, we like it, we like watching things. You know, I suppose as time goes on, I probably won't travel so far, but there's a lot of stuff coming up here at Stratford over the next few years. So
it's not difficult for you to get here?
No. Well, my sister, Rosalie's in Loughton. It's only seven stops from Stratford. Yeah. So all I've got to do is get down by train from Walberswick, where I live. And, you know, I'm here seven stops on and we're watching the hockey.
Well, I'm sure that the current England team appreciates having you on the sideline, Jenny, because of everything that you've given to hockey.
Well, apart from Kate Walsh, the others wouldn't even know me. I mean, I remember seeing Kate in her first Olympics in 2000 in Sydney.
Thank you very much for telling me about it. It's been wonderful hearing about it.
Thank you for asking me.
That you've made to hockey. Thank you very much, Jenny.